And welcome to the show. Once again, it's your host, Cam. Hopefully energetic as always. We got another exclusive guest. We got Saturday Morning Cereals. Amanda is here tonight. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to, this is my first collaboration with another podcast. So this is so exciting. And it's refreshing. On a topic I really love. So
that's what perfect. We hope for. So sometimes it's so funny. People will try and just dig for a fan. But if honestly, if you're even listening to like someone else's podcast, they'll just throw out, that reminds me of this other movie or show I love. And like, boom, I know the instant future guest for the subject. But yeah, I looked out on this. I just asked some general topics and we were going back and forth. And I was like, okay, one way or another, you're on the list of people queued up for talking about Pixar or DreamWorks. You know,
I appreciate that. Yes.
And, we all did our own homework. I was mainly just going into just some various detailed editorials. It was just fun because it was also just the only thing better than like listening to a commentary or an interview is seeing another critic take in another retrospect. And sometimes they'll talk about something that has totally overshadowed what other people are looking for or grasp. And it's not always the simplest of things. Sometimes it's even just like, you know, yeah, there's an element of this. There's a bit of that. Yeah, that's a good point. I'll let you enter into here. So, you know, when you were growing up with Pixar, were you already kind of like most of us, just like preteens and just kind of grasping the whole focus on how animation is actually telling a pretty big narrative and overall lot of themes, almost as powerful as a real legit movie?
Well, I was lucky enough, my parents raised me on Disney animated movies, so animation in general and cartoons of any kind, really, Disney, Looney Tunes, etc., been a big part of my life. And nice. It still is in my 30s. Nice. I was introduced, well, and honestly, growing up as a tomboy, I mean, I'm a, you know, I do like the princess movies, right? I like Cinderella and just Tangled, the more recent princess stories. They're fun. I was always into like the animals, like Lion King and Robin Hood, those kind of movies.
Sweet.
But Toy Story came out in 1995, and that changed my life, right?
It's definitely the earliest movie experience, I think, for most people in the 90s.
Right. I was 5 years old, and I remember seeing this movie. I don't know why, but I just latched onto it so hard. And I remember getting like my first Woody doll, and and then Toy Story 2 came out, Monsters, Inc. came out. And my dad, he really loved Toy Story as well. He still does. So he made sure to take us to all these Pixar films. And at the time, we didn't really make the connection between Pixar and Disney. Like, I just thought, and at the time it's completely owned like studio. It was just, I don't know if it was like sponsored by Disney at the time. I can't remember the timeline.
They were the distributor and
the
production company.
And stuff that's like not Disney. I remember like DreamWorks, Shrek, and Ants. Ants came out the same time as Bug's Life. And I remember that whole
rivalry.
Which movie's better type of thing, which obviously like I loved Bug's Life. Ants was good as its own. If you look past the whole like Pixar made a movie about bugs at the like around the same time, Ants was decent, but I always gravitated more towards Pixar. And I also like anime a little bit. I like Pokemon. Like Pokemon's still one of my number one things in my 30s. I still watch it. I still watch the new cartoon episodes when they come out. But yeah, when it comes to Pixar though, and Toy Story is my number one fandom. I have, up to this day, Toy Story everything. I have a big collection. But yeah, if you ask me like what my favorite movies are, they fall in the Pixar spectrum, like The Incredibles. Me and my boyfriend, who's also my co-host, love The Incredibles.
It's, I think many just, do.
Because we just feel like it's one of it's right up there with the first Toy Story movie as far as an original story goes. Just like mind-blowing animation.
Did you ever see that was back cosplay? Then
oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I was going to try to do Elastigirl, cosplay Elastigirl at one time, but
ooh,
nothing.
That'd be pretty hard.
Yeah. But I cosplay a lot as Jessie, the cowgirl from Toy Story. She's my absolute
badass
favorite character of anything. That's the primary character I collect from the movie is Jessie. Yeah. And then I just saw Lightyear. What was it? 2 weeks ago? Yeah.
Nice.
Pixar has me.
It's so ridiculous how we were talking last episode. It's like somebody didn't go see it. And it's like, what is people not understand? It's about the astronaut, not the toy. Mm-hmm. It's the astronaut that inspired the toy. What?
I know. I got, and I'm not going to, like, I just got like an anonymous like message on Twitter. It was like, I did not like Lightyear because Tim Allen wasn't the voice, and just basically going off about everything about the film, like tearing it apart. And I'm just like
trying to cancel anything.
Right. It's like you got to go into it with a fresh, clean eye of knowing this is not the toy, it's the actual human Buzz Lightyear. And
there
it's going to be
even
different.
A few homophobic remarks. Oh, how dare two astronauts kiss each other. It's like, oh my God.
We went off on kind of like a rant on our episode about that, where we're like, get off if you don't support that. Like, go away, because I'm not here for that. Yeah. And honestly, that's one of the biggest reasons why the reviews are not the greatest for Lightyear is because of that, which is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. And it's always funny when you'll see contrarians who will do the whole, I don't have a problem with it, just stop putting it in the movie. I'm like, well, so you have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I have a pretty cool article from Business Insider. Chris Weller is the author of this. And when discussing the deeper meaning of Pixar on the article, the uniquely powerful reason why their movies are so good, he exclaims in the deeper meaning section that Pixar understands that the most important stories resonate with people because they appeal to some core truth about being alive, regardless of whether the stories are seen through the eyes of monsters, clownfish, robots, or cars. Later goes on to talk about that Toy Story, you know, taught kids the virtues of cooperation over pridefulness. And I do think that's a good point because, you know, DreamWorks kind of goes back to just, not to be a diss, but they kind of go into more just, we were talking about this last episode, is like, basically, the characters learn to understand each other and get along, while DreamWorks kind of goes for the love-hate mentality that you might see in, say, a Lethal Weapon or Indiana Jones movie, or even a typical Looney Tunes. Like, at the end of the day, Bugs Bunny will always, tease Daffy Duck, and Daffy Duck will always spite him. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with even
right
characters. Mm-hmm. Just,
yeah,
someone is always going to walk on explosives or just continually be the butt of many jokes. And but Pixar doesn't even like take an easy way out. Like, they go into just so many things that families are like even afraid to talk about, like life and death situations. Growing up, learning to be more mature, and just making sure that the character is different by movie's end. Do you think they're just all together, just kind of just it? People like, what do you think it is mainly about the story that resonates the most, aside from just tackling just familiar and rare subject matter in animation?
So when you were talking about like DreamWorks and just kind of how the characters, they just go back and forth, I always thought there was a lot of like just fart jokes with DreamWorks movies.
Yeah, Shrek.
And they're funny.
No, they're
right. They're
for
funny.
Their,
they're
right.
Quotable. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and you know, you can quote the first Shrek movie and people laugh and they're like, oh yeah, haha, you know, but a lot of these movies, like I have never connected with a character in a DreamWorks movie the way I do in a Pixar film.
Yeah.
And the reason why I feel like I like Jessie so much is I see a lot of myself in her. I connected with her on a very like emotional, personal level. And a lot of people do that with these characters, whether it's like Riley from Inside Out. That one was another relatable one. And these characters have relatable emotions, relatable stories. And Jessie has like PTSD, abandonment issues, she's also very like spunky and just tries to find the best in life, even when it's dark. And today, like this world now, you need to kind of have a head like Jessie, like just you gotta look out for yourself, but enjoy the moment. I brought up Riley, and then we also had trying to recall a lot of these movies now. The Incredibles, you have like the family aspect of it all. Yeah, they're superheroes, but you know, moms can relate to Elastigirl, dads can relate to Mr. Incredible. I love Violet. I know what it's like to be a sister with an annoying little brother and, you know, have parents that you want to go out. So just that kind of thing. It just has heart and it's just so life related, like relatable to personal life. I don't know how else to put it.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And,
altogether, it seems like, I mean, the last one I saw, I'm a little behind, but that there was the one that I think, can't remember if they premiered it on Disney or Apple, but no, I think it was Disney Plus, but I was just blown away by it. Was the one with, I think Tina Fey was in it and Jamie Foxx.
Oh, Soul.
Yes, Soul. And
yeah, Soul, beautiful.
And
yeah,
I was just blown away because, you know, Trent Reznor, who I always loved from Nine Inch Nails, you know, has gone into movie scoring, and I was just blown away by his score for that. And I think altogether is like, I also like how, we talked a bunch last time about how you can just see the storyboards that go into it even before you see the making of behind the scenes. It's like, because they're seeing when to add whatever, you know, whether it's the score, the music cue, or the character reaction. It's more than just lining up with whoever's in the voice box, and they're making sure that the voice is the appropriate tone and not just someone ad-libbing or anything.
I highly encourage people to go on Disney Plus or even YouTube and search for behind the scenes of all the Pixar movies.
Yeah.
There's the more recent one out there is of Buzz Lightyear. Pixar came out with a behind the scenes look of Lightyear and just like how they took the toy character and made it into this other story. I studied 3D animation. My boyfriend, studied 3D modeling, 3D animation. So we're a little in tune with the business in general. And it's just a really great look if you're interested in something like that. If you want to pursue animation or ever want to get on at an animation studio. They're just fantastic to watch. And it's really fun to watch the voice actors as well, like Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, you know, like the big names that they come to these roles because Pixar is known for their movies. And that's why they can get these big name actors to come and do these voices. So it's really fun to watch.
And, you know, this was years after, you know, again, not everyone does physical media anymore. And, you know, I don't know that they do any of these specials on regular Disney channels so much now as they probably do on Disney Plus.
What's also interesting is, I don't know if you've watched Turning Red, that is a direct to Disney Plus film that Pixar made. I just remember how, like, I felt like it was very low on the market scale. It wasn't really marketed heavily before it came out, and it blew me away. It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And of course, like, it's Pixar, I should have known, but again, they had a really good behind the scenes look of that film as well. And I think it's Soul, Turning Red, and maybe a little bit of Lightyear is all the creative team. They all worked from home during the pandemic. And it's just so amazing to see what you can create just working remotely away from your team.
Absolutely. Because there were a lot of movies that during pandemic would edit from home over Zoom, and they would time it out so that they wouldn't risk someone trying to hack into their feed and steal the movie. And some of them were still came out pretty good, and there were other ones that where I was like, well, no wonder this got dumped on streaming. It's so unrecognizable. It had just had no purpose, despite the great talents involved with it. There was a few on Paramount and Netflix and Hulu where I was like, this looks like it was made for peanuts, and what a shame, because
yeah, I know, like Space Jam came out, we were like so disappointed in that. Tom and Jerry, that was another one.
Yeah, I can't defend Jerry. I kind of had fun with Space Jam too, but I understand.
Yeah, right.
It's I think we're also just getting some of these movies just came out way too late, like, and you just don't it begs the question, how much of it is nostalgia now versus just missed the mark?
We were
sorry, go ahead.
We brought that up in one of my episodes this past winter when Space Jam came out. How many children now actually know Bugs Bunny and those characters and like know the story, know their
How many of them know the history of Looney Tunes from the classic ones versus the newer one that's on HBO Max?
And I felt like the target audience for Space Jam was for like teenagers for the most part. Like when the first Space Jam came out for us, we were young, and but we knew Looney Tunes. We grew up with that.
I never wore out my VHS tape. I played it constantly. Annually. Yeah.
Like, I feel like the only way people or kids now know Looney Tunes is if you go to like a Six Flags park, because those characters walk around. We have a Six Flags up here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And the characters walk around and stuff. But it's like, do these kids know who they even are?
I think many of them do, kind of like the Three Stooges. But it's a bigger, a better question that you're still bringing up now, because they still show those like very, very like early in the morning, like 3 or 4 is like what kid is staying up that late to watch that? You know, it is kind of like even some other classic stuff where it's like, do they just have good parents, or are they just accessing it on the now streaming systems, you know?
Right.
Do they just have the DVDs and they pull them out whenever?
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone gets into half the stuff now, since everyone's trying to cut time, and unfortunately not everything is going to be able to be digitally remastered just because the ingredients aren't there, the studio doesn't think enough people are interested, even though many are, and it is a good question. And I'm glad that you actually started contrasting this with that and various anime, because it is actually kind of interesting when you see how many people on DeviantArt when that was first the thing, and now there's, now there's countless other ones just would do so much just creative, just fan art, crossovers, even before fan fiction, you know, when everyone's like taking their favorite crime procedural show and mixing it up with their favorite sitcom or action adventure movie. Like, whoa, what did I just read? That's amazing. Or that's a great idea, but I don't like that guy's writing. That's really
Like you would go to read something and then it's like a run on sentences, misspelling. And I'm just like, listen, I love that idea, but you need to go and learn how to write.
We'll just
rip the idea out, but the words can just go that way.
We were even joking about how there's like a few other cult TV shows that each time you try to like find a good fan fiction, it just can't be helped. For whatever reason, there's always one that gets either a little too gruesome or violent or perverted, and you're just like, Jesus, why does it have to go there? I think it can end way more PG-13 level. like it was on TV. And like, I don't know who conjured this up. If this is just a bizarre urge of yours, I think you'd need to get out a little more, sir.
Right.
Or ma'am. Whoever wrote it. Yep. do you think it's also, I mean, I'll admit this, when you have time to rewatch more animation, you pay more attention to all the credits that you normally already kind of see in a movie, but kind of everyone likes to just wait till the very end, written by so-and-so, directed by so-and-so. I was always trying to figure out, what does editor or director of photography, like a cameraman? The head of all the cameras. And so it was always funny seeing it on animation, because it made you wonder, it's like, okay, so how does that all get compressed on film? You know, it's like, they're animating it. And And it really did. I think it's good that more people are watching these, because it does actually open up your whole possibility, and you're looking at more than just whoever the first person is interviewed. Is like, no, it's a team effort. Sometimes it's, you know, Warner Brothers Animation, especially when they were doing a lot of the Scooby-Doo movies that were made for TV or direct-to-video and would play all the time on Cartoon Network, they incorporated a South Korean company to do a lot of that animation.
Oh, but yeah. I remember that,
But we didn't think about it. We're just like, hey, the gang's back. And so it's just so cool how it's like all these various international talents are having to come together and speak the same language, speak the same method, and make sure everyone's getting it. So there is no, because you can't reshoot. You got to redraw, reanimate, you know, and make sure it is all lining up, and the animation has to be somewhat finished while the actor is talking into the voice booth. And it did get annoying when I would see people growing up, they'd watch commercials and say, I can do that. I'm like, no, not, it looks easy, but it was probably 12 hours of work, and you got to be able to be a good sport, be able to take direction, not be difficult. And it is annoying how half the time, I mean, that was definitely a blooper I found with DreamWorks, where it's like, okay, I love many of these actors. Like, I like David Schwimmer, I like Angelina Jolie, but I gotta admit, some of the voices in Madagascar and Kung Fu Panda just don't line up for me. They just feel like they're they just got the first famous person and they put them in the movie. And
yeah,
that's all fine and dandy when you're 14, but we're not 14 anymore, you know. And those movies were coming out way when I was just like entering adulthood, young adulthood. And so it got to where it's like, okay, that's fine. Okay, well, that's serviceable. Okay, well, now I'll watch it once, but I'm not coming back to it. You know, that's decent.
Right,
popcorn.
Right.
And it did get frustrating after a while, because it's like they did it with Shrek. And it's like, I think after a while, everyone was just like, okay, let's just go back to the first two movies. Let's just stop it there.
Well, it's really interesting. I got a couple points from what you just said here. Well, first of all, it's really interesting when like an animation film, or even when you have like anime that comes from Japan, how different it's interpreted over there compared to here.
Ooh.
I'm going to take Pokemon, for example. So a lot of the voice actors over there make the characters sound so much like different and have like a different personality
more
than
solemn,
when it comes over here to the United
subtle.
States. Yeah. Right. Right.
And you get the more blunt, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Like, well, that's not how they're going. Their mouth is very animated, but their nature is more subdued.
And the lip flap doesn't really match up.
No.
I was watching, my brother used to watch Yu-Gi-Oh! And that was always one of my, but there's sometimes like in Pokemon too, where like I'll catch it and I'm like, oh, what? Like they're yelling and they're talking, but their mouth isn't moving. It's weird. But
are they thinking it? Yeah.
Right. And sometimes like it's nice to go watch, even with just subtitles, like the Japanese. But it's also though interesting, like if you take Toy Story and it's dubbed in like Brazil or Ireland or wherever in the world, that the story can be interpreted different than what originally was here. So I think that's really interesting.
That's why it was easier for audiences overseas to compress. And it's even funnier when you would find out overseas. Like I was actually talking about this the other night. The TV show 24 is kind of like the TV show NCIS. What they did in Britain for the latter was basically edit them down into 90-minute movies.
But
24 apparently is funny because he's voiced by the same Japanese actor who's the voice of Homer Simpson on the Simpsons dub in Japan.
Oh wow.
So that's very meta, and it gets even more complex because I know that the German voice actor who dubs Schwarzenegger also dubs Stallone, so that got even more awkward when they were in recent movies together. Who's talking? How do I make my pitch of my voice? And Yes, when you're harping on is it is funny seeing what stuff gets cut because you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. that you put that back in, all of a sudden the cartoon goes from being G-rated to PG, so or
exactly, yeah, and then yeah, and like for example too, like it, I never knew until like I don't know a few years ago that Toy Story 2, there's a part where Buzz Lightyear is like, "We will not risk it until he's safe in Andy's room," and the American flag is behind him.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
But everywhere else in the world, they have just like a globe behind him.
Yeah, it just doesn't translate because it's not American.
Right. So, but it's like so interesting to see that though. Like, I don't know.
And how they save all those files so they can go back and modify for TV at any time. Yeah.
And my second thing is too, you were mentioning how like they would, you know, like you can have an animation studio and they bring in an animated or an animation studio from like Japan or wherever. And
Kimba the
White
Lion.
Big fans. We're really big fans of Avatar, The Last Airbender, and like that whole world, like Legend of Korra. And I believe they do that. They outsource their like mid action drawings to an animation studio like overseas, and then they draw it out and then they send it back. It's really interesting. It's an interesting process.
How many minutes each frame lasts? Because
yeah,
and it's even harder when a show is action or fantasy based. You got to know how many shots the effects sequence or fight scene is going to last, because yeah, that's not what people forget. That's
you need those
scripted.
Extra frames drawn.
That lasts literally one sentence. You know, main character punches so and so five different times. That's how it reads on a script. It doesn't. It doesn't last 20 minutes on the screenplay that we see in the final cut. And it is cool to see it all visualized. And like you say, they're having to all collaborate. They all get the equal credit for and giving each other notes. It's more than just like you would see with Industrial Light and Magic, where the special effects supervisor who's done grown up doing model work is now teaching the new guys, you know, future award-winning effects artists what to do here, giving them notes here, and to get the right, because they all respect each other and they're not just you know, hovering like you would say at maybe an IT center or Wells Fargo.
Right. Yeah. And definitely, well, you know, and they throw in the post credit scenes, you know, and sometimes I feel like they just want you to see who created the film, which, you know, out of respect for everybody that worked on the film, we do that. And It's really interesting.
They did have good credits. They really did.
And it's really interesting. If you go into the field of animation and modeling and everything, you can see each different job field that you can hold just by watching end credit scenes in these animated films. Like, you could be like a DP, but you can also be like a 3D renderer.
They'll even have lighting. Inside humor.
You can be rigging.
This position looks important.
Mm-hmm. Co-director, assistant animator, like, you know, just everything. Going into animation and stuff, I always just thought you're either an animator or you're a modeler, or, you know, I didn't know. It branches off into
line producer, what's
things.
That? You draw, mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. Oh, you shoot
storyboarding artist, storyboard, yeah, storyboarding director, it's just stuff like that.
Meeting scheduler, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had the privilege of, I had a Kat Good, who directed Monsters at Work, on my podcast, and oh, she gave lovely. Me so much great advice about, as she went from being a storyboard artist to being a director of this. And it's interesting because you would think that it was like completely Pixar, that
or whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no, I thought Monsters at Work was created exactly like just by Pixar in Emeryville, California. No, they outsourced to like Vancouver and I think a little bit of Canada. But she was telling me like Vancouver is like booming for animators and modelers. So
yeah, they don't really have as many. They kind of do a lot of flash animation. And I love how you segued into here, because it is so true. It's like there's an assistant to the casting director. There's like you say, there's the rigger, there's the gaffer. Why do we need that? There's no actual, you know, film of live action being shot. It's like, it was still, you got to light the animation and let it, sometimes it's just like with clay or whatever, you got to let it model. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do start it out where it's like, we got to pre-visualize this. So yeah, can we have a clay model?
You have your character designer, your character, you, the person comes up with the character.
This is before motion capture, which we were doing with Avatar and video games, like Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. And I like how you brought up the anime, because my sister growing up, like, she had a lot of Sailor Moon DVDs, and then she found out years later, those were bootleg DVDs sold on, you know, Amazon by an unofficial company. And so much of our animation, you know, half the time, you know, was not officially released. There just was no way to obtain it unless you set a little known thing called a VCR, and, you know, or if you had fancy uncles or folks, then you went over and recorded off their TiVo. No harm. But yeah, it's like, now this is all second nature and people are forgetting about this, but now is like, with the Disney Plus, you're having still a few exclusives. Like, people were noticing it with some of the other stuff when they uploaded the whole Marvel and Star Wars library, that there were still special features that weren't on any of the discs. And you're like, wow, well, is that just left over, like, promo material from a Comic-Con convention or whatever? Because I definitely don't recall seeing that on the disc. So I guarantee you, especially if they're going streaming only, there's definitely going to be a bunch of like exclusive like freebies that you're not going to get anywhere else. And did this also make you kind of fall in love with short films? Because like, I had no idea what a short film was, other than, again, like Saturday morning cartoons and Three Stooges. I didn't, I was like, there's this one which won an Oscar, because again, they only had 5 minutes and they had to be able to make an impact and create some kind of lasting emotion. It got even more confusing when Blue Sky was doing it too with their Ice Age movies.
Yeah. And one thing I really am appreciating with Disney Plus and how Pixar and Walt Disney Animation is doing, and Walt Disney Animation, Blue Sky was bought out. Ice Age is like on Disney Plus and all that. So yeah, keep that in mind. But
I forgot about that's true.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But they made just the other day, and I was gonna throw this on my Twitter as like a small review. I really loved it. It was Baymax. And they're just like 15, no more than 15 minute shorts. There's like 6 of them. And they're just so good. It tells like a story from beginning, middle, and end in those short few minutes.
I'll have to ask my buddy Nate if he's seen that. I know he's.
And then there's also Doug Days that Pixar created, and those are like 10 minutes each too, based off Doug from the movie Up.
Yeah.
Excellent.
What's the one with the walking man, and he uses paper to send a message or something to that.
Oh, Paper Man.
That's the one. And yep. I'm trying to remember which one, which feature that played before.
Oh, goodness. If
that was Toy Story 3. Was that?
It wasn't a Toy Story movie. Okay.
Maybe it wasn't Incredibles, but it was something like post 2012 or something like that.
It was 2012. Yeah.
Paper Man, Pixar. It just popped into my head.
That was kind of like a game changer for animation because it was 2D animated.
2D and 3D, yeah.
And 3D all mashed together. Yeah, it was beautiful. It actually was.
It was before Wreck-It Ralph. Okay, so yep. Disney, my bad, but.
Yep. Another great animated film. And the thing with Wreck-It Ralph, but also like Pixar films like Coco and Soul, the rendering just keeps getting better and better on these films. And one thing that these streaming services can let these animation studios do is just amp up the creativity just that much more, and hence these shorter animation pieces that like Dog Days, Baymax, and because you can just see the technology and how much it evolved through the years. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. And I know Toy Story 4 kind of sealed the deal with the toys, but I'm really hoping like we get like a spinoff of, I don't know. Like,
I mean, if Buzz Lightyear can have his own cartoon show for like a season.
I'm hoping for a Woody's Roundup, like kind of like a live action Toy Story, like sequel. I thought for sure, like, Buzz was going to meet up with like a Western thing at the end, but that was just right. A cool thing. But I can see that they've really improved with the human character models.
Yeah.
If you look at Andy and Sid from Toy Story 1 compared to now in Toy Story 4, the humans, like, and then Lightyear, they all looked amazing.
So wild.
And
yeah.
I'm still geeking out over the Zurg character model, the character design of Zurg. Oh my God. It was just incredible.
Right? Oh man.
Yeah.
Did you see any of the other kind of animations that Disney outsourced, but also like they just distributed, but they didn't actually animate, and they kind of got, you can see these all on Disney Plus now also, but they didn't. That unfortunately they just kind of were also considered kind of trying to, this is before they merged into, they apologized to Pixar and merged with them, but I actually enjoyed movies like The Wild, but that was at the time considered just a Madagascar clone.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw that one.
I've seen a few. Now there's sometimes where the water gets muddied in my brain. It's like, I don't know what was Disney and what was like an off brand. Because like if you go to like a flea market, you'll find like a DVD like Ice Queen, right. But then you'll also find what like Sword in the Stone. You'll find like Disney Sword in the Stone, and I'm just like, that okay? Like they're right next to each other, and I'm like, okay, what are we doing? Because Disney owns everything now, so you never know. It's interesting though if you really dive into some of this Pixar history and how I don't want to say the word malice, but like how crazy the merge was and how they wanted to just completely like redo Toy Story 2. There was, I actually found an old script of what Toy Story 2 was gonna be. It's kind of wild. Or was it Toy Story 3? I can't remember. It was one of them, but yeah, it was a process to get them merged together. But now I'm glad like everything's going hand in hand now. I know John Lasseter, I know he's, you know,
yeah, he got
been and gone now,
he
but
got canceled
he
and now
merged
working for Apple TV. I'm like, not sure how I feel about that. Even if he's just a consultant, you're still paying him every phone call you give him.
Right. And Pete Docter, though, who's now head of Pixar, he's such a great guy. I actually had the privilege of meeting him. He was at Disney World at one time.
I'm just kidding. That's great.
Yeah, no, he's super nice, and I'm super happy for him. Yeah, I'm super happy for him. And but I feel like John Lasseter really did connect Pixar and Walt Disney Animation together because he was a part of both teams. So that helped a lot, and it really shows in all the movies. And I'm really glad that there's...
Because even though mm-hmm. people like to crap on Cars now, I still respected them when they decided, mm-hmm. hey, let's hold it back. We got the animation down to a T. We can do this in our sleep. Mm-hmm. But just like Toy Story 2, they're like, it's not ready. We know it. We feel it. We live and breathe this. It mm-hmm. needs more retooling on the story. We got to mm-hmm. redo the dialogue. We got to do a little something else that the character quirks. You know, it, just like any mm-hmm. TV showrunner, when they leave and they find out, ooh, the guy I placed in charge, they're not doing too great a job. I just saw the headline in The Hollywood Reporter. I'm I'm not so enthused about the response. So what can we do?
And my point about this is too, though, it's like, there's some Disney movies out there, the older ones that you're just like, meh about. But me personally, I've never had that. I mean, maybe Good Dinosaur. I know that one had like some stories with it. But as far as like all the Pixar films go, I never really had a major complaint about any of them. And it's because too, knowing that Pixar will not release a movie until they're like over 100% sure that it's going to
even 1,000%. You know,
right. Just affect the audience, you know, emotionally, and just, you know, have a great story behind them. You know, and now it's like I see that in Disney films as well. I up till recently, I mean, I feel like most of the Disney films I've seen have been okay. So Encanto Zootopia. Zootopia is like one of my favorites.
Funny parody of buddy movies and I guess you could say bigotry and laid off society, a little bit of Big Brother watching you, and it's just like
But they really, I feel like Pixar, the animation studio as a whole, really helped, I don't know, bring the films of Walt Disney Animation
adults now that extra more than something. Just for kids.
Right And they're touching on relatable issues of the world today, LGBTQ+ representation. They want to make sure that's in the films now. Diversity.
That's what I hated too. Like, I saw it's people just... who it's like you guys were clearly under a rock all this time. Did you think this?
Yeah.
It was never diverse. It was always diverse. And I've seen that with even live action sequels. I see people complain about it. It's like, oh, so you clearly haven't seen the earlier movies that this is based off of. It's like they're literally doing the same damn thing. So
because Princess and the Frog, she was, I believe, like the first princess of color, or just main character of color in a Disney film, and then that was followed now by Moana, and then we had Raya, and then we had Encanto. So it's great. And
I mean, we again, had Aladdin, like, but those were even more progressive by far.
Yeah, they were westernized. I felt like, I mean, I love Aladdin, but you know.
Yeah, just, there's some
white. There's so much culturally wrong with that movie.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
The genie is clearly not Egyptian, you know.
right.
Robin Williams. So yeah, there are times where you just gotta say, okay, it is fantasy after all, but just be a little minded. You know, it's like just let's open yourself up to the world a bit and just realize it can only work in a cartoon form. You know.
Mm-hmm. Now, one drawback. And I'm sorry, I don't want to take us off topic a little bit here, but
it's fine. We're kind
I feel
of
like I feel like though I kind of do miss the 2D animation films, like, and I'm not liking all the remakes. And now I loved the Aladdin remake, but that was kind of pushing it for me. But the Lion King remake didn't need it.
Yeah,
I'm just like, why are we doing this? Like, why touch something that was perfect back in the day? And it still is
how I look at it with that. Mm-hmm. And even Jungle Book, Jon Favreau did a good mercenary job, so then he could do what he really wanted to do, which was work with some indie filmmakers he'd known for a while and raise their careers on the Mandalorian franchise. I think that's what it's just like with how Disney was getting all the various acclaimed indie filmmakers, and they did a totally different kind of job on some of the live action movies for them, as well as the superhero ones. And I was like, well, see, Here's the thing. They're working a totally different ballpark. Everyone's going to say yes to it automatically because it's $200 million to do this, whatever. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's different. That after this, you can pull a Coppola and you can do the movie you really want to do, which is similar to your indie, you know, your $10,000 movie that won last year at Sundance, you know?
Right.
And it is what it is. It is a business, and there have been times where, yeah, they're showing a little bit of their true colors. And it's like, I saw Cinderella, and I was like, okay, that's decent. I'm not going to watch that again. I think Maleficent, I know many people hate that one, but I kind of liked it just because it was different.
Yeah, it was decent. Yeah,
for sure. Kind of like Lord of the Rings. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to win over everyone, all of them, because I guess we're just a little remaked out. But at the same time, I mean, hopefully eventually someone's gonna, I think the right mind is gonna come along and come over from Pixar, hopefully. And all they gotta literally do is just put them as like the VP of like programming at Disney Animation, and hopefully they could try a new different style of 2D or 3D animation. Even if it's just a Sunday morning cartoon on one of the cable channels, it would still be cool to see them experiment with different voices and themes. But we'll see. We'll definitely see.
Yep.
I'm just glad that, again, you can see virtually everything in the vault, you know, from their various studios on Disney
Plus. It's nice. Yeah.
It's even weirder in Canada, because some of the stuff that would technically be PG-13 or R, the movies and TV, are available for streaming there on Canada. So that makes it even weirder.
Oh, wow. Considered
a Disney prince or princess now.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah, it's finally like The Defenders, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, they're finally
here in America.
It's like took you long enough.
here in America,
there's so many parental controls you have to do.
Parental controls, and
it's like, oh my goodness.
In America, some of the stuff is still only available on Hulu, because that's just the only place for it. It's Fox TV, and it's kind of like when they, you know, when they bought most of, again, you know, all of,
like,
Fox.
Disney owns Handmaid's Tale.
They own Handmaid's Tale. They own Alien and Predator. They own. So, one podcaster did bring up a funny thing. I think it was on Time Shifters. They're like, so Ripley is a Disney princess.
But one thing, like with DreamWorks, though, like with their animation style, is I feel it's been consistent. I definitely have seen improvement with their technology. Whatever I see, like I said, I'm not really well tuned on DreamWorks and how that studio operates, but they've had some good films. I mean, Shrek that came out, Trolls. My nieces love Trolls, and then How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, I saw.
So it's like they get lucky. I feel like they.
It works or it doesn't.
Yeah.
Like Shrek, it's like the audience didn't receive.
The audience decides. Yeah, it's like they produce these movies, and then the audience sees it, and they decide if it's going to be good or bad. So
Megamind kind of became kind of an underground kind of cult. And I never followed it.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I saw it once, and I was like, what?
I had friends at school who were obsessed with it. I was like, really?
Fan art everywhere. Yeah, I remember.
I even see, I kid you not, like an AC unit that I swear has basically stolen the main character of that, and they butchered. I'm like, I'm surprised you haven't had a cease and desist order. That's pretty dangerous to be doing,
right?
One thing about Disney
and Pixar is that their characters are attractive. I mean, they can make a lion look attractive. They can make a monster look attractive. They can make a cowboy toy look attractive.
Just look real.
But
enough.
For me with DreamWorks, it's like some of these characters, you can tell they're just 3D model design characters. But so I never got that.
And they're just not
obsession.
They're not as good at even allowing there to be a lot of reflecting technology. When you see Pixar, they remind you that it looks real, because they'll, you know, it's not for style over substance. It's like you legit see like light reflecting off of someone's face like it would in real life, or water sparkling and showing a mirror image. And it's never an expensive over the top sequence that doesn't serve the story. It's all been very calculated, and it's just, again, people are telling the exact same dramatic stories. It's just an animated form and having to make sure to transition it right. And
and they're very meticulous.
Shortcuts, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely. Yep. Yeah, that's an excellent way of putting it.
I mean, we didn't need Shrek 3 and 4, and it got to where it was okay, well, it's here.
I've only seen the first Ice Age movie. Well, I mean, that was Blue Sky at the time, but now it's Disney.
Yeah.
Now they're over my Disney Plus account now. I'm like, oh gosh.
I think I stopped after Free. I can't remember which one I gave up on, but it was definitely
Not to discredit people that work at these studios. It's just personal taste.
No, it's
absolutely
subjective. Would you say, how to phrase this, that they all together, you know, it was a friendly rivalry, or did DreamWorks kind of rupture the water a bit?
I know there's a lot of people that go back and forth between Pixar and DreamWorks. I think I know somebody that just went over to DreamWorks from Pixar. So I don't think there's really rivalry there. I think it could be even it's a very demanding field for the most part. So it's an honor to get into DreamWorks or Pixar in general, or same as Sony Animation. They had Spider-Man into the multi or Spider-Man. Oh my gosh, that's my boyfriend's favorite movie.
Spider-Verse.
Thank you. Yeah. And that was like a breakout movie for them. And then they also have Minions and the Despicable Me, like that franchise. So it's like to get into one of those big animation studios is an honor and it's a great job. So it's like, I feel like, yeah, it's a rivalry overall at the box office, but on a personal like artist level, I don't think so. I think they respect each other, but that's just me. That's just my observation. I would hope.
No, it's fine. What was the other animated series of movies? Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I was kind of looking forward to even Penguins of Madagascar, and I was so bummed by it. It just had all these great voice acting and yet barely anything resembling a story, like even less than Part 3 of Madagascar. And then I see parts of the Nickelodeon cartoon and I was like, you know what, it's pretty witty, why wasn't that in the movie? So basically it's kind of like where I am with the new Star Trek. Is like I had to have those lesser movies in order to have the current show, which is pretty good for what it is. You know, it's like you gotta have the lesser installment to have the better installment.
And no one markets like Disney. Nobody throws their movies in people's faces like Disney. Yeah. And that's one thing I feel like DreamWorks lacks. Like there's some times where you go to an animated film and there's a DreamWorks movie before, or not even DreamWorks. Like it could be a Sony animated piece, you know, whatever before. And you're like, that looks pretty good. But then you forget about it because you never see it again.
Yeah. And that's a shame because, and I didn't have much. As a kid, you don't really have as much of the way of thinking as other people do who are more open-minded or even just love everything. It's like, and when you grow up, you pretty much would be like, well, I loved it in the theater. I want to see it again on, you know, home video. And sometimes you'd find out the hard way is like, it's good. I'm just watched it in the wrong mood. And then there's other ones like, yeah, no, that was a one-time watch. This sucks.
Yeah. I was fortunate enough. Like, I mean, my family were Disney nerds overall, but my parents always had, like, we would go to the video store and they would just get like these random animated films. You know, there's just some, I couldn't even tell you the names, but it's like one was like a reindeer. It was called like Annabelle's Wish or something during Christmas. I was obsessed with that movie
so many times on Cartoon Network. Yeah.
And then there was like Balto. That was another. I loved Balto. Like I wanted a dog like him so bad. But again, I can't think of the animation studio that made Balto. I mean, I'd probably Google it, but still, it's like these different non big name animated films that my parents would just go to the video store and, oh, this will keep Amanda occupied.
This will shut him up.
Right. but they have an impact on you when you grow up and you remember them and you're like, oh, I kind of want to revisit that, you know, like now talking about Balto. I'm like, I kind of want to watch Balto now.
My sister and I do this every once in a while where I'm like, do you remember seeing this on Nickelodeon or Disney? And our hints are, by the way, it wasn't made by any of those studios.
Anastasia, that's another one.
Yeah, there's another that, yeah, Don Bluth's resume is, he did it outside of Disney by working at Fox and Warner Brothers, and guess what? All his Fox ones are definitely owned by Disney now. You can definitely stream Titan AE on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So this has been a cool digest.
Yeah.
So if you were to introduce in, like, say, let's say you're a film appreciation professor, which I hope you do. I hope you get to be an assistant or something and actually do a thorough breakdown on, like, some of my toolish professors who were just wanted us to just be bored during class but not actually go in depth. And it's like, we're in college, what do you think we're paying for a free hour class about? what movies would you like to have everyone, like, watch over the course of, like, 2 days, and then, like, come back with an assignment on digesting a scene or its importance in film history?
Probably Toy Story, 1995, okay. First cool. movie, hands down. Because that also, if you want to go back and watch, was it Tin Toy? The original Pixar short that inspired Toy Story? If you watch those two together.
Yes.
That would be a good assignment.
That would be incredible. Because it would be all about, you know, hey, they didn't have the world planted to them on, you know, handed to them on a platter.
Yes, they worked. Yep, they worked their way up hard. And then, you know, and then for, you know, kicks, you can watch Toy Story 4 and, you know.
Right. Is it a needed sequel?
Look at the compare.
Is it mm-hmm. good? Is it better than the original? You know, you don't know until you ask. And inevitably, you're going to get someone who doesn't like movies, but is taking this for fun or some stupid idiot. Yeah. And then you want to see if they can still do the assignment, even if their opinion is very unpopular. I hate this black and white movie. I hate this free hour award-winning movie. I have only on very extremely rare occasions encountered someone who hated Pixar, and they never had a good reason for it. They were just, well, I don't believe in saying someone's wrong, but I am going to say you're just so full of it. You have failed to tell me why you don't like this. I can understand not liking a popular filmmaker, finding the movie overlong, or barely any story, or just self-indulgent. But when you're talking animation, you better be really, really filtering it. It's like, okay, the animation's good.
Yeah.
Found the story predictable, or, I mean, that's kind of how we were when we were talking about, like, the Muppets. Like, we didn't care for, we really loved the new mockumentary show that unfortunately only lasted a season. It was kind of like Modern Family and The Office, and kind of didn't care for, like, the two other movies, but same kind of deal with what I talked earlier. It's like those two movies that were made basically for 6-year-olds as opposed to everyone, you know, it was like we needed those in order to have more of what we have now.
And the history of just the studios, like Disney, Pixar, and this is, like, kind of, I'm throwing this out here, is I'm really fascinated by The Wizard of Oz and, like, the conspiracies behind that too. So if you really dive into some of this stuff, it's interesting. Like, you'll find yourself going down a rabbit hole, I promise you.
Oh yeah, people who still claim to be related to some of the dwarf actors, or even if they're not related, they think they are because they just played those characters at festivals or conventions. Is like, oh man. Skin and like you say, it is a rabbit hole. It does
It's fun.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Oh, so this has been a delight.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thank you. I could talk about Pixar and just animated films all day.
That's why we pick the topics we pick. If we can't last for more than 20 minutes, it's probably not all that great a topic. Or maybe we need to give it 10 more years, even if we're not around here that long.
And like one thing too is there's just so many animated, like I was talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender, that those creators that made that show, they're forming their own animation studio. So that's something that's on my radar too to watch, because like I said, I love the shows. The stories are great. The animation, it's like anime, but it's mostly American based. So all around creative, and you know, it's just, it's not just Pixar and, you can't and Disney do that, nowadays that rule the world.
Even. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always so someone definitely who wants to get like the not the best voice acting, or like you say, hey, the cartoon animation itself can suffer, you know, source it out. And it's like, no. Mm-hmm. There's an audience for that, but it's not this.
Yeah. And it's just, it's such a growing industry. And everyone that works on these films all possess a talent that is recognized in the world and should be recognized. And I commend everybody. And that's what makes these movies so great. Even, you know, if you don't like a film, hopefully you at least enjoyed your time with it.
Right. And since you're going into anime, I take it you know, we've done that with kind of filmmakers like Paul Verhoeven, where most people are familiar with their American, you know, hits and misses, as opposed to their classics that were made overseas in places like Korea or, you know, the Netherlands or Brazil. And I take it you've had to do the same with like the Hayao Miyazaki's of the worlds, where you're just like, okay, this is where they're in their prime. This is where they finally get award acclaim. But is it, you know, their best, you know, this is in their top 10, you know? And it is a cool thing, because you did it, if you love it all, it's even harder.
Yeah.
Then you have to go through it. It's like, yeah, I'll admit, you know, the last act kind of feels a little Americanized, or like a studio compromise versus what.
Well, I grew up with the original Pokemon anime, right? And I just, those, that was what I've always known about Pokemon. But then when I got access to the internet when I was like a teenager, I was able to get somehow find all the Japanese Pokemon episodes with subtitles.
Nice.
And I'm like, and I love Team Rocket. They're like my favorite characters in Pokemon. So they're like my number one fandom from back in the day. But anyway,
just fun to root for the bad guy.
Right.
I take it you
but saw they're that. So good in Japan too. Like they have their own characterization here in the United States. Like James and Jesse, they're just two bumbling idiots that we love, but in Japan they're more of like a villain. Yeah, more of like a villain type. So it's just interesting how the stories read out.
Yeah, I take it,
especially when it comes to anime.
So I take it you've also seen the one episode. The episode itself is kind of paying tribute to like Godzilla type movies, where the Pokemon are on a rampage of the city, and it was kind of the most iconic one that kind of got banned because post 9/11, because a building ends up toppling.
yeah
and yeah. I always secretly wanted to see it, and I would always find screenshots of it. I was like, oh man, yeah, can't hear that one.
yeah there's a couple. There was another one where Porygon was like the main subject of the episode, and it was like a lot of flashing lights, and it gave kids seizures in Japan. So it didn't come over here. So that's interesting to see.
Yeah, now it's second nature. We're always telling people the camera might shake a bit, or it might involve a lot of neon lights. Well, this has been a joy. I'm glad you're able to make this chat.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate anytime. It.
Where can people find you on the net? Obviously, you got Saturday Morning Serial on Twitter. Are you also on the other platforms?
Yep. So we're Saturday Morning Serial on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Audible. Yeah, and we're a good time. We have a Serial fam, so come on over and join us. And I try to post on Saturdays. Sometimes it's hard, especially when things get released on like Fridays. So we try to avoid spoilers, but you know, like with Thor coming out, like Thor's my favorite superhero, so it'll be word vomit on Saturday.
Verbatim.
Right.
Well, excellent. Any movies, other movies, like older ones that you're going into that are like going on streaming or anything that you might tackle in the future?
You said older movies?
Yeah.
Goodness. Well, we're having our season finale with Stranger Things being the last episode next week.
Nice.
Because we're actually going to rebrand. My boyfriend just jumped on with me as my co-host. So there's going to be two of us. So mm-hmm. we got a schedule, but we do like to discuss a lot of, we mostly dive into fandom. That's like first and foremost, we want to create a safe space for people to just express how much they love like their fandom and movies and television shows.
How the fans interacted in history. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so we dive into everything. We did like a Legend of Korra episode, which that was on Nickelodeon back in like 2016. And then we also did like Famous Rabbits this past Easter. Nice. We talked about like Bugs Bunny and Thumper. So just yeah. stuff like that.
I have a pet rabbit, so she approves.
Oh, I got two.
Even better.
Rabbit owners, you got, yeah.
you got two rabbits, it's a farm burn.
Yep. Yep. They're my children.
Aww.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.